Hi, this is Justine To. Welcome to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. Roger and Hiroko Seth run an aftercare home for girls who've been liberated from sex trafficking, and they do that in India. For these girls, coming to this aftercare home means that it's the first safe environment for them right after they've been sexually exploited, some of them for years. So Roger and Hiroko have come into the CPX studio to tell us about their work. Welcome, Roger and Hiroko.
Thank you.
So I can imagine that when the girls are brought to you, they are very traumatised. How do you deal with and how do you care for them in that situation?
Well, in the first day when they came, they are just so traumatized and shocked, and they didn't know where they are brought to. So simply we explain them, this is a safe place, and this is a place to help you. So just rest, and they have a lot of medical issues. So we take care of the medical and give them good food and give them new clothes. So we take care of the immediate first.
So you have to build trust with the girls, and we have a team of 9 women, Indian women, that are doing that. Sometimes the girls have wanted to stay in the brothels because it was portrayed to them that this was the place for them. This is where they belonged. There's no other place they could go. And it's kind of like, we're your family here. In other cases, girls have been wanting to be rescued, or they've escaped or something like that. But how are they going to know that we're safe adults? Because some of them have been sold from brothel to brothel to brothel. So it does take that time for them to actually get that sense, okay, this is okay to be here.
Yeah, I can imagine that there would be lots of trauma counseling going on as well, and round-the-clock care.
Yeah, our value is take care of a girl who is like whole person, like holistic care. So we have trauma counseling. We have education, like homeschooling. They cannot go outside because they are in court cases. So like we help them legally for their legal right or prosecute their abusers. Also, we help them like physical health and like life skills, like how to go back to the society. We talk about relationships and sexual abuse and marriage and different issues.
For girls who have been in brothel situations and sexual servitude, there's a limited way that they know how to engage with other people.
Many of them got trafficked because their family situation is a neglect or abuse. So many girls who come to us like teenagers, but their emotional health is usually like 5 to 6 years old.
Many people today think that slavery is something that was abolished in the 19th century, but the modern problem is far worse than ever before. Can you tell us about the Indian context? How do these girls first get into slavery in the first place?
The typical pattern is that maybe the girls from a very poor family, who they may not know their own rights, and they've got a lot of mouths to feed. So some well-dressed man shows up in the village and says, look, I've got a good job for your daughter in the city. Here's an advance of some money, and you can send the daughter with me. And right there, the girl's actually been sold. And maybe she or her parents, they might not know that. In other cases, parents are willingly selling their daughters. Usually the children are sold by somebody known to them, some middle person, an uncle or auntie or somebody in the village. There are cases where girls are kind of lured by an older boyfriend that they fall in love with, and they go off for a little trip together to get married. Sometimes it's kidnapping, but then they're passed from a series of middlemen till they get to the big city to a brothel. Then the girl will find herself locked in this room, being raped 8 to 10 times a day, being told, if you try to run away, we'll go get your little sister and bring her here, or we'll go back to your parents and kill them. So there's a lot of coercion around her that keeps her trapped there.
So, Roger, it seems quite extraordinary to us because in some of these cases where the girls are in the brothels, they're actually presided over by a madam. So we have women exploiting young girls there. Are we naive to get outraged by that?
It's not naive. I think it is something that does make us feel outraged. Why would anybody exploit anybody else? But you think about a woman making it possible for a young girl to be sexually abused is really tragic. When my wife Hiroko used to go to the brothels to visit women and find out what they really were interested in or cared about, she found a lot of cases that the women who were adults had begun the sex work when they were young. They had been trafficked in as young children or teenagers. And the thing is that the buying value for a virgin is very high. Somebody would pay maybe $400 to have sex with a virgin, whereas the woman who's 30 or 40 can only get like $7 for one time. So the economy, the reality of it, just kind of forces that woman who grows up in that rank, seeing all this money passing in front of her when she's young, being exploited, and going to the hands of somebody above her. When she becomes older, she doesn't have selling value, so she can't earn it on her own. So it's just going to motivate her to bring another young child and more young children from the village. It's this cycle that perpetuates itself.
Yeah, it's very tragic where you see victims becoming perpetrators and on it goes.
I mean, we met a woman who told us that she sold her daughter to the brothel down the street. That was the one that I think was really heartbreaking.
Yeah, and so did she have any, she wouldn't have any contact with her after that?
Actually, this madam sold her own daughter to another brothel, which is only three doors in the same block. So daughter still come, and with granddaughter, when you're sexually exploited, it's something like break down the humanity, like something break down the person. And then when, in the beginning, you're trapped because you're young. And then when you get older, you're free. In the beginning, you didn't have any education. You didn't have any training. And you don't know anything outside of the world. And your emotional health is just stopped from the beginning. So something like bad or like what known to them is better than unknown outside the world. They don't have to survive. So they're just stuck inside even though they know it's not good.
Yeah, Hiroko, you were saying before that the sexual exploitation in some ways kills something inside the person. So even if they're free, they're not really free.
So it's like when somebody is exploited sexually, somebody, something died inside of you. And when that happened again and again, it's like you're living the life of dying. When I went to Brussels and meet those ladies, what struck me is those ladies' eyes. It's kind of like in Japanese, I'm Japanese, but there's this expression of their eyes are like dead fish eyes. It means like there's no life in it. So it's like just staring in a space. It's almost like beyond despair.
So how do you face that when you're coming to your work? Like how do you nurture them spiritually in that way to bring them back from the dead?
It's not just one way, ABC. So that's why we want to take care of the girl holistically. You know, there's health, education and everything. But they are hurt by the community. They're hurt by their family and they're hurt by this community of Brussels. It's bad community, but it is the community they used to belong to. So we really emphasize on like loving, caring, accepting community. Besides counseling and education and vocational training, all that we needed. But if we don't have the loving, accepting community, I think there is no healing.
And you can imagine that for many of these girls, this would be the first circumstance in which love can be expressed to them, but without any hidden agenda, without any exploitation in the midst of that.
When we were planning this whole aftercare home, we really wanted to design an environment that would get a girl, give her the chance to start on the path of healing. So some of our values are things like beauty and hope. So part of that is, of course, in the physical environment, the house that we rent and things like that. But that's mostly in the team, the women that are caring for these girls. They have to keep having that hope in their hearts, even when the girls are behaving really badly and you're really angry at them or frustrated, or when the girl herself is, you know, smashing her head against the wall and saying, I want to die. There's no reason for me to live. My life is ruined. If we don't carry that hope so that it's somewhere around her, she's not going to get it out of the sky. She has to get it from someone.
It's a fascinating way that you express that. I know that when the girls come to your aftercare home, it's in the first, you know, 1 to 6 or so months after they've first been liberated. What differences do you see in them from when they come to when they leave your care?
Before we started this transition home, that was our question. In short term, how much influence we can put and we can influence girls. But actually, after we started, it was kind of amazing how the girl continent, whole continent changed. Like some girl didn't talk, didn't smile, didn't eat. In a week or so, they start relaxing, they start smiling, they start talking, and they start telling us the story of their life, what happened in their short lives.
I think of one girl that we call Asha, who came to us and had had no education. She was from a village far away from the big city, and she was thin and scrawny when she came in the door, so then our cook was all excited to start helping to fatten her up. But she liked the school that we run, and in just the 2 months that she was with us, she began to start reading and writing Hindi, and then she was learning basic maths, double-digit addition and subtraction, and even some multiplication tables. And then when we located her family and found out the family was safe and the government ordered that she go back home, before she left, she told us, I'm going to make sure I go to school from now on when I get back. And when I grow up, I want to become a teacher.
There was one girl who came to us who was rescued from Brussels. And she told us she was she never loved before. So our caregiver asked her, do you feel loved here? And she kind of, you know, shyly smiled, I do, but I'm scared. So she's like a little kitten, start experiencing love, but like not sure, shall I open up, shall I trust?
These stories possibly, and these experiences of these girls with these transformed lives, this must keep you going, surely.
It's like if pain and the injustice and anger, if that drives us, we're just going to burn out because there's so much overwhelming. But what drives us is really the hope that they can change. Their life is not end. There is a hope for the future. There is transformation, redemption available. That really drives us.
We have one girl named Ronnie, and you know, she's really been struggling a lot. She shouts at the caregivers and lots of behavioral problems. And it's this kind of thing where even though she's 14, she's behaving like a six-year-old or a five-year-old. The caregivers have been really patiently taking her aside and saying, look, you can't shout at people. That doesn't show respect. And they kind of talk her through it. And a few days after one of these incidents happened, she was talking with our counselor in a one-on-one session. And the counselor was asking, how are you going with all this? And she said, well, you know, I've been getting a lot of correction from the aunties and the mothers in the home. I know that they love me and that they want me to become different, and they're helping me to do that. And then later on, she told the social worker, I've never had any adult give me this kind of correction in my life. I don't really know how to be. And so it's really telling, isn't it, that this girl that was sort of being neglected and then exploited, she's needing that basic parameters. She's starting to get the vision that she can become different.
Roger, would you be able to share with us, you know, what role your Christian faith plays in this work?
For us, I think it goes back to what kind of God is God? You know, sometimes people think of him as very angry and moralistic and just ready to, you know, crush people that are not keeping up the standard. Or they just want to talk in a triumphalist way that we only talk about strength and power. But it's very interesting if you look at the life of Jesus. He's this guy who's called a man of sorrows. He's this person that was born to a very poor family. And there's something very powerful about the idea of incarnation, that he goes right in to where the very broken and hurting people are. I often think that if he were in our city, he'd go right to the red light district to hang out with these women and girls. So knowing that this is the way he is and that he has a vision for these girls, that they can become something really more beautiful than what they could even imagine yet, and that their life is not ruined, even though they've had so much abuse and exploitation, he has this vision for what they'll become. That kind of thing really drives us.
So you've only been open for a couple of months. This work is very new. So how many beds do you have at the moment, and what are your plans for the future?
Our bed is, we have a 12 bed, and since it's open January, we had 18 girls, and in which 5 of them are still with us.
So when we designed the home, we were hoping to make it for 25 beds, and we have the space to allow for that. But the government inspector said, look, why don't you start small, show us how this is working, how you can do this, and then we'll give you a license for more and more girls. And so we hope to kind of grow organically in that way to be able to help a lot of girls. And in the future, we'd like to have a long-term component to our home, not just the short-term stay. For the girls who can't go back to their families and can't go to some other place, we'd like to have another kind of a team ready to help them really go forward educationally and vocationally to be able to really integrate well to society.
It's wonderful, inspiring work that you do, but at the same time, it's this massive problem, and you have at the moment a 12-bed home, and you know, you have plans for expansion, but how are you going to get there? And what can people do to kind of come on board this work with you? How can we contribute in our little ways?
Well, I think the most direct thing to do is to go to the website. It's simaid.org.au/girls. That's the website for a campaign called Girls Off the Streets through the partner agency SimAid that they're running here in Australia. And that provides ways that people can share awareness, can give, can become well-wishers and help us in different ways as we're increasingly putting things into place as our work grows and evolves.
Well, that's great. Well, you've heard that, and I encourage you to head to the website and find out how you can be involved in caring for girls after they've been liberated from sexual exploitation. Thank you very much to Roger and Hidoko for joining us.
For more Christian perspective on contemporary life, publicchristianity.org.
So next time, Simon Smart and I head to the Mind Body Spirit Festival, where everything from organic tea to crystal healing and energy massages is offered to help you on your journey to health and healing. We're going to be talking about the spiritual hunger the festival taps into. Catch you then.